This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Right, over to you, Ajahn.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just to confirm, we're still doing a talk first or the meditation? I thought you wasn't quite sure.
Yes, can we do the talk first?
No problem.
Meditation?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, one of the wonderful things about meditation is that it does have an interesting relationship to our everyday life. And there's a lot in our meditation practice that we can learn about our daily life and vice versa. Things we learn in our daily life are relevant in our meditation as well. And not many people focus on that, which is quite interesting. In Buddhist thought, there's a central point that basically everybody wants to be happy. But everybody's looking for sort of the enjoyment, the sweetness, the sweet spot. And that's fully understandable. You know, there's a lot in life which is very sweet and enjoyable. But there's a bit of a problem with a lot of the choices that we make. The reality is our relationship to a lot of our experiences like junk food. Sounds a bit strange, but when you think about when you walk into a fast food outlet, and there's the cheapest thing on the menu is often this cheeseburger, which is, you know, if it didn't have the sauce and things in it, you wouldn't want to eat it. It's tasteless. But ironically, a lot of the experiences that we choose are a lot like cheeseburgers. Basically, we don't make very good choices. When you think about it, a lot of the experiences that we really treasure, when it's in family life, in work life, in any situations, the ones that we truly remember fondly, there's always something to them. And it isn't always something that special, but it's often there's something there in the experience itself of quality that isn't there in, say, the junk food experiences of life. And the problem is that we're so busy chasing these junk food experiences of life, We don't really, well, you know, the marketing is so strong, we just get pulled into them. And we think that this is what we should be having to be happy. And so we go along with the crowd and we buy these things, and it's kind of, we consume them, we eat them, or we wear them, or we do whatever, and it's kind of like, great. Is this it? The meaninglessness comes in. And this is a bit of a problem. The superficiality of this sort of cheeseburger lifestyle doesn't satisfy us. So we're always looking for something else. We're constantly looking for something else. And because it's more meaningless, we feel more empty. And we look more urgently to find something to fill that hole. And I think many of us can relate to that. Many of us have had experiences, sometimes many, most of our life can be related to that experience, of just this feeling that, is this it? But that's the thing. When we approach our meditation, many of us are doing cheeseburger meditation. I don't want that to be a new brand. I don't want that to be a new book or anything. But that's the thing, is that a lot of the meditations we do, they're just sort of sitting there, okay, now I have to watch the breath, going in, going out, or I have to chant a metta sutta, or I have to chant a mantra. Oh, this is so dull. And it just doesn't give you anything. It's not fulfilling. It feels empty and boring and meaningless. An empty ritual that we do because we're being good Buddhists, or because we think it's good for our health, or who knows, we may have heard it's a good idea, it's part of the wellness fashion, who knows. The thing is that meditation doesn't have to be meaningless, and our life doesn't have to be meaningless. In our choices, there's a lot of opportunity to make it something more special. And it isn't something that complicated. A lot of the times, it is the attitude that we bring to it. Sometimes it's the context, sometimes it's both. There's been plenty of times in my life that I've been to good family outings, and those are things that I remember very fondly. And there's just as many of them where I'm in a wonderful place, a great restaurant, the conversation's great, the food is excellent, the service is great, atmosphere's brilliant, and at the time I'm going, gee, I've got so many better things I need to do. How long am I going to be here for? And those experiences just weren't it. And this is the thing. Some of our fondest memories often happened when we were children. And they weren't really, when you look back on it, they weren't really that exciting. You know, they weren't big, shiny, expensive, grand things that you see in the marketing, on the commercials on TV. They're far more simple things. I remember very fondly as a child, a relative who I was very close to fed me a special dish when I was 3 or 4 years old, and I can still remember it, sitting in her 1950s kitchen, eating it, watching her make it. And it was hard-boiled eggs, which were warm, mashed, with Vegemite. And that was a food given for young kids for making them grow up big and strong. And as you can kind of see, it worked. Maybe too well. And many years later, I thought, gee, that I really, really love that. I'll try and make that again. And I did. And I remember exactly how she made it. And it was horrible. It was the most revolting thing I'd ever eaten. And that showed me that a lot of what our experiences are is just the quality of it. Not necessarily the thing itself. It was just being there. Being with the person I really cared about. And that made it all special. And so in our meditation, what is our relationship to our meditation? What is our relationship to the feeling that we're generating? If it's a feeling of metta or compassion or joy or the acceptance or our relationship with our breathing or anything else, what is it that we're doing? Are we bringing a good attitude, a good vibe into it? Because that is a great foundation to build, both in life and in meditation. They go together. But there's a little bit of a catch there, because sometimes we're all excited and we sit down and set up and everything's great, and it's kind of like, it's nothing. There's no feeling there. There's no sort of enjoyment. So we have to be a little careful of the expectation as well, because that can be a bit of a trap as well. The expectation can undermine what we're doing. So in a sense, when you really look at the great experiences of life we've had, they were just cases where we felt safe, we felt happy, we could enjoy it, we could let go, we could settle in. And it's exactly the same in meditation. We relax, we settle in, letting go just happens, and we enjoy it. And these meditations become richer and fulfilling, and they soothe us from a busy day of work, from different difficulties in the family, all kinds of troubles. Just being able to relax is very soothing. And that we can bring into life because we quickly recognize that there's a pattern here. There's a correlation going on that if I'm tense and uptight and all, you know, that's going to affect our meditation. It's going to affect our life. So we have a choice. And it's not actually that one very difficult to make. There's not a lot of sacrifice that we have to make. We don't have to give up and be, you know, oh, we must be good Buddhists and keep the rules super strict and everything else. We can settle into it. And they come naturally. And we find that this is a better way. This is more enjoyable. And because of that, we want to essentially... enriching it can be a difficult word here. Supporting it is probably a better one. We recognize that there's a value in living a good life. So the precepts, you know, keeping the five precepts and doing good in life, helping others. All of a sudden, that isn't just a thing we do to be good Buddhists. That's something now that has meaning. It has value. And you can feel that. And you take that with you in your life and in your meditation cushion. And every little bit helps. Every little bit lifts you up. And in this world that we live in now, when there's so many difficulties, COVID, so much loss, so much trouble with the economy, so much trouble with politics and and so on and so on. And many people are currently living in lockdown. And that's not a, you know, they're not enjoying their time. And it's quite difficult to enjoy it in those circumstances. But there's something that you can do in that time. Just a little bit of meditation that lifts you up. An opportunity to soften a little bit, to put down those troubles for a little while, is far more rewarding. And it makes our difficult situations, it's not going to make them shiny and lovely and fun and everything else. It's going to make them more bearable. And that, at the minimum, is worthwhile. Because you can keep your life in better shape and you can help others to do so too. And that's just it. This isn't just a one-way thing. It's always, you know, on one hand, yes, we need to recognize that we need to look after ourselves first, but at the same time, we have to look after others. So it does work both ways. And so when we meditate, it really helps to think about what kind of meditation do we really want? When we're approaching our meditation, what do we do? What style are we doing and why are we doing it? We might have read books, or we might have watched YouTube videos, we might have seen a teacher, heard lectures, maybe done it, and not necessarily understood exactly why we're doing this, watching the breath or watching, you know, being mindful or doing metta or doing a mantra or whatever the style is. There's plenty of different meditation styles. What is it for? If it doesn't have any direct involvement and meaning to you, then yeah, okay, it's worthwhile doing to a small extent. There's lots of benefits to it. It can be relaxing and da-da-da-da-da. But the bigger benefit of it is sliding away. We're missing it. And it's a bit unfortunate, but it's right there. And it's so wonderful to know that everybody, even beginner meditators, can do this. Everybody has it in them to be able to do this. Because in life, when we think back to those experiences that we've had with family, with friends, when we were young, and we think about what was happening there, we didn't have any worries. In that moment, it was just present, just that. And that was wonderful. And that's what we bring into the meditation. So it's very, very useful to bring that in. But where do we develop it from there? Does it work both ways? And that's where it gets more and more interesting, because the more and more we develop this, the more and more we can sort of see, oh, okay, I'm choosing the cheeseburger on the menu kind of thing, and that's not really going to fulfill me. I'm going to sit there for half an hour and be miserable, and then just back at it and back at work and, you know, just as drained and unhappy as I was before. But we don't have to. And it's so fantastic. In our daily lives, we can choose far more options. So this is something to try about when we meditate. Because all the different styles really point to the same kind of thing. They really all point to the calming down the mind. Because there is that central point that by building a good relationship with ourselves, we can see those little things in us that we block out. And there's plenty of them. And there's plenty of those things that we block out sometimes for good reasons, because we're not ready to deal with them. But of course, there are some things which are desperate to be heard, desperate to be resolved. And those are the things that we have to work on. But as we do that, we can kind of say there's a bit of a conflict of interest. Because there's the things in us which want to be heard, which want to be dealt with. But there's another part of us that knows we're not ready to do this. No, no, no. And we just keep locking it down and pushing it away. And that's a major part of our psychology is, you know, most of our life we're busy looking for distractions, the cheeseburger, and keeping ourselves busy and pretending none of this is happening. And at the end of it, it just builds up and builds up and builds up. And it either comes out in our health, or it affects us in other ways, or there's just a big blow up and, you know, we don't know how to handle it in that moment. So being able to have that good relationship with ourselves, which happens through daily life and our meditation, we feel more confident with ourselves, more open to ourselves. We can sit down and sort of say, what do we need to deal with? How do we feel? What do we need? How can we improve? Where can we go from here in a good way? And that is a great reward. That's a great prize that comes from living well and good living well in meditation as well. Having both together. Because when we choose these cheeseburger experiences, there's part of us that just goes, oh, no, not again. You know, why are they doing, what are they thinking? There's part of us that sort of is shocked and ashamed at the crazy decisions that we make. And then there's that inner shame which just wants to run away from that. And then how does it deal with it? Many people, they run away into alcohol, into drugs, television, internet, all kinds of things to escape those little bits. So you can kind of see there's this complex relationship here that on one hand, these things need to be dealt with. There's part of us that says, we're not ready to do this. We're not going to go there. And then there's the after effect. It's not getting resolved. We feel bad, but we want some happiness. We want the meaninglessness to go away. We want some satisfaction, some sweetness, the dolce vita. We want some niceness. And we run to whatever we can find. And of course, advertisers, they're not Buddhists, but they're well aware of this. And that's how they make, that's how they're very successful at making billion-dollar corporations. But, you know, this is the thing. Right there, we have the opportunity to improve our lives. And it is difficult sometimes, but it is rewarding at the same time. Because building that good relationship with ourselves, a lot of these troubles can come down. A lot of these firewalls, which we have spoken of before, can come down as well. We don't need to have them up all the time. And that makes things feel more light and more airy and more open. So we don't feel trapped and locked into ourselves and afraid of what's going to happen tomorrow, or not wanting to talk about certain things, or have those sensitive spots that if anybody starts mentioning certain words, we clam up. Lots of different things people have, because when you have that good relationship, we can open and deal with those things. And in this day and age, I think those skills are more valuable than ever, because so many people have lost loved ones, so many people are worried about their jobs and economies and the supply chains and what's going to happen with the world, what's going to happen tomorrow. So many people stuck in lockdown and don't know what to do with being shut down. We don't have to run into these same old traps, these same old cheeseburger lifestyles, which just is, I mean, when you think about it, if you take the sauce, you know, the tasty things out of that cheeseburger, you probably wouldn't want to eat it. It's pretty tasteless just as it is. So there's all these opportunities that can be used from living good as well as the meditation. I'll just have a few more minutes left. So we can think about this in some ways. But the most important thing comes from building that good relationship in the meditation. And that's the thing which not many people really, really connect to, I think, because it's not something really talked about that much. You go to a meditation retreat, basically you're taught the method. You're taught the technique, you're taught what to do, you sit on the cushion, you do this, and take it from there. And that's pretty much all that's said. And then you're pretty much driving blind. You're just trying to follow as the teacher instructed, and good luck. All this stuff happens and not many people know what to do with it. But here's an opportunity to explore the meditation. To really look at it and going, how can this be a good, useful tool for us? We might only meditate maybe half an hour a day, maybe half an hour a week, maybe half an hour a month. But that half an hour can have a far bigger impact on our life than all the other moments of the day. And how on earth can that be right? But it is. Because, firstly, when you have your eyes closed and you're settling down, these things become a little bit more prominent. So by having that good relationship with yourself in the meditation, it's far more enjoyable and it's far more meaningful, and therefore it's far more satisfying. And that energy carries into your daily life and your relationships and how you live. And that is worthwhile. Just that. So I'm pretty much 27 minutes. Shall we jump in and do the meditation?
I think that sounds wonderful.
Let's jump in.
Let's jump.
So, first things first, everybody adjust yourselves and make yourselves comfortable. If you need to wiggle, please wiggle. If you need to adjust your clothes, please do so. If you need to adjust your posture. I see some good movement there. That's the thing. You've already been sitting for half an hour, so your joints have opened up a little bit. It's good to adjust them as you need to. Okay. And now everyone, please let us sit down and let's enjoy this. We'll do. And just close your eyes. And as you breathe in, How does that feel? Is it a delight to breathe in? Is it a delight just to be here? How wonderful this is just to be here. No other troubles. Just this. As you breathe in, use the breath to relax. Relax your head and your face, where so much tension is often stored up, often in the forehead or the jaw and the mouth. Can you smile? And as you're breathing, relax your neck. Adjust it if you need to. Maybe it needs a little stretch. Maybe it needs a little movement. And you relax the head and the neck together. You might find small muscles which get lost in between. Now relax your shoulders. The shoulders and neck hold so much tension. And now we can let them go. And now relax your chest. By relaxing the chest and the lungs, you can help relax the breath. And by relaxing the breath, you relax everything else. Relax your upper back, another place so much tension is stored up. Can you feel it in your breath? Is it getting easier? Softer? Does it flow more freely? Now relax your arms, these arms that we use so much, they get tired so easy. If you need to, please move them to a more comfortable place. Now remove your relax your stomach. Is it sending you any messages? Does it want to sag out? Just let it go as it needs to be. Now relax your lower back. Let it sink into the chair. Now, consider the whole of your upper body and your arms as a whole unit, and find anything that has been left out or anything hidden in between. What messages is it sending you? Does it need to move or to shuffle in? Now the legs, how are they feeling? These legs that we use so much, that stand so much weight. Are the knees too tight? Please move them if you need to. Now experience the whole body to relax. Now some things have settled. Perhaps other things can settle more or need new attention. Use the breath to relax the whole body. As this gift to yourself. Because here, we don't need to hold on. Here we can let go. And here we can just be. This is the opportunity to enjoy the meditation, to enjoy what you're doing. Because is this meaningful? Is this moment of just being here, just relaxing, just being completely here, is this meaningful? And how are you now? Are you still present? as the breath disappeared? Or are you still here with it? And now, think of all the wonderful things you have done in your life. All the good things you've done, both for yourself and for others. And as you think about them, how do you feel? Does it feel good? Or is there a part of you that says, I haven't done anything good? Something that has low self-esteem. Because here is a chance to lift that self-esteem. To recognize that we have done so much good in our lives, even if we haven't realized it. And as you think about that, send the wish to yourself for your own happiness, your own well-being, and your freedom to find the meaningful things in life. And share that wish to those you care about. May they have meaningful things in their life. And may they find the way to be meaningful in their lives. And may they be happy. And share this wish with the whole world, which has seen so much disruption and so much difficulty. May all people and all beings find meaning and happiness in their lives. And may all beings be free of COVID and have good health. And in a few seconds, I'll ring the bell. But still keep that wish, that way to find meaning and happiness. And when you're ready, please open your eyes. Welcome back.
Thank you. It feels like we've been on a long journey this evening. It's very pleasant. Thank you.
Well, I've actually, we did a little longer than half an hour, so for the 3 minutes that I shortchanged you on the talk, I gave you an extra 3 minutes into meditation, so it kind of worked out.
That's good timing. Yeah. Thank you very much, Venerable. So, it's time for your questions and answers, or Venerable, would you like to talk a little bit longer? What would you like to do?
Well, of course, if there's any questions, of course I'm open.
Okay. So, does anybody have a question or a comment that they'd like to make? It's a very nice opportunity if you'd like to speak.
Hi, Chris. You know I'll ask a question and make a comment.
Oh, I was hoping. Thank you.
So, thank you, Venerable. It's always a pleasure to have you here and learn from you. You said something that I found very important, and you said, being with the person I really care about. And I thought, well, certainly in meditation, that's going to be this person. And this is the person I'm going to, you know, focus on caring about. And I thought that was a nice way to think about the meditation, you know, being with the person I really care about. And you spoke about not necessarily trying to get to the breath, because that's not going to be so easy if, you know, the body, the mind is in a lot of different places. And one of the things that I find that when I'm looking to calm the body, do a body scan, but making it more than that, because sometimes it's something that just, you know, get done quick, you know, quick done with the body, but the body often, very often, needs more than that.
Yep.
And today, I thought about my eye. You know, there's a lot of muscles in the eyes and a lot of muscles connected to the eyes. And I thought, well, when I think about, you know, focus on the eyes, calming the eyes, and it was very nice. And then when the eyes were calm, the muscles were calm in the eyes, which relaxed the whole face, so I'll move on. And I thought, I'm not going to move on. I'm going to stay with that calmness in the eyes. And explore that. And I guess what I want to ask you, or maybe just say, is finding out that that's okay. That's how to establish that friendliness and that calmness in the body to then move about. And I wanted to ask you about that, because, you know, where's the clock? What's the timeline on focusing on a particular body part or working with something like that?
The simple answer is there is no fixed way of doing this. And that is, I think that scares a lot of people. I think what they want, I mean, particularly in the way that we live, you know, we're very structured, we're very organized, or we have to be very organized, and we're looking for routine, we're looking for bump, bump, bump method, we're looking for technique, we're looking for, okay, this happens and this and this and this. And a lot of the times it doesn't work that way. And more often than not, I found that when it does work to a method, like clockwork, the result is more clockwork. It just doesn't really go anywhere. And so definitely it's okay. Definitely it's worth doing. Just spending that few seconds, few minutes, heck, even the whole meditation, just in one little bit. Just that space around your eyes and just relaxing that. And just being in that Because what happens? All of a sudden, you trust yourself. You feel safe. You feel like this is a place where it's okay to let go and settle. So it's absolutely okay to do it. See, this is the complication, is that more often we're teaching, this is what to do, this is how you meditate, this is the basics, like how to drive a car. But, you know, when you're on the road, it's not like how you were taught, you know, by reading a book. It's real then. And it's far more like when you're... It's the difference between when you're stuck in traffic trying to get to work in rush hour versus you're on holiday on the open road, countryside all around you. It's a completely different context. You can stop whenever you want and have a look at the countryside. And you can have a picnic, you can chill out, you can just lean up against the car and just enjoy the open space and have nothing to do. Because a lot of people, they wonder, well, what's the point of that? You know, isn't that just indulgent? Isn't that just, you know, I can do that watching TV? But really, and that's the subtlety of this, because do you get the same response? You sit down in front of the TV, you zone out, yeah, you relax a bit, and then you're just sort of bored out of, you know, bored and looking for something else to do, because that experience in itself was so superficial, it was meaningless. And part of you, many parts of us actually, were looking for something a bit more, a bit, something a bit deeper, something more fulfilling. And because it didn't get that from sitting in front of the TV, it's going to be looking for something else to fill that hole, to fill that emptiness, to feel that uncomfortable, and this whole cascade effect. So of course, in the meditation, to be able to spend that time is perfectly all right. And what happens, all of a sudden you feel more confident in yourself to meditate. That when you sit down, it's no longer this, oh, I have to sit and do this style and follow, you know, okay, it's been 15 minutes, I should be doing this, and da-da-da-da-da. All these things which actually derail the process and unfortunately make it so, you know, this is ultimately why people stop meditating, is because it just isn't fulfilling and it just doesn't give them any benefit and it doesn't give them any insight, it doesn't give them any growth in their practice. And that's something to consider as well, is that because we have that meaning in our practice, we can share that with others and we can share that with ourselves. So it's well worth doing and it's totally, totally good to do it. So does that help?
Yes, very much so. And yes, I could see how it helps develop the rest and giving myself that time, that friendliness. And yes, let's hang out, let's be calm. One time I did one on just one of my, I said, okay, I'm going to do my feet. And I remember, it happened to me, I just had a particular amount of time, but I didn't even get past one foot. I was still on all the toes because I realized there's so many different parts of each toe.
Mm-hmm.
One, and I thought, and you can do that. You can take that beautiful time and explore every little, and you can settle on one little part, just the inside of one toe, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Like you're shaking your head and that's thank you, because It's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, one other word for that is this wonderful word in Buddhism called apamana, which means boundless, which means that exact same kindness can be extended limitlessly. So it has that potential to grow and grow and become, you know, all-encompassing. It's wonderful. Any other questions? Come on, I know you have some.
Yes, do come on. It really is a special opportunity to do this.
I have no question. I only would like to make a comment when I'm older. I have to say your teaching and what you are saying is always very much resonating with me. Also, I really like your fast food approach because that's exactly how I currently feel in the world more or less. I really feel like I'm out in a McDonald's, in a big McDonald's branch, and everything is around, which I don't like. Mm-hmm. No offense to people who maybe like these kind of things, but I feel currently sometimes very, very lost and very, I don't know. I ask myself a lot of times, is this really it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wow, I'm 55 now. I lived my life, I had my career, I did this and that. And now I'm currently more or less living more or less like a monastic life. I'm currently not working. I live very remote, don't watch television. I'm not on social media. So I'm very living a very secluded life. And every day I'm getting more like, what is this all about? Every day it's getting more and more and more. And also coming back to the meditation practice, I was always laughing, or not laughing, but I found it quite amusing with Ajahn Brahm. And he was saying, let go. And this currently does very much the trick for me to completely, let go, more or less. That's all I can say. That was my comment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your teachings.
Well, you're welcome. Because underlying all of this is a question that so many of us have in ourselves at some point in our life. Is this it? We've been working our whole lives. We've been busy. We've been told by today, by not just media and advertising and all these things, but by influencers and by lobbyists and all kinds of things. This is what we should be doing. This is what we need to be happy. And basically, these people are paid to sell a product. They don't actually use the product themselves. So they don't really know whether this is the car you should be driving, this is the food you should be eating, this is the clothes you will be wearing and you'll be happy. They just build a system to make you believe that. And yet, you buy those things, you do those things, you follow the instructions, and you're left there stranded going, is this it? What a waste. But the problem is, which is many unfortunate, a benefit for us, we could say, but a benefit that is open for everyone, is that if you use the meditation and your daily life, your practice, to enrich, to find the meaning, because the meaning is right here, and that's so beautiful, and then all of a sudden, you don't need those things. They just don't really hold you anymore. But there's something so much more wonderful that's there. And that's well worth doing.
Are we ready for the next question? Somebody else or another comment? Thank you very much, Yuri. Chinda, lovely.
Thank you, Venerable Son of Saturn. Coming back to your example of junk food, even if you eat good food,
mm-hmm.
or called good food, every day the same thing, you don't get the same results in your mind.
Yeah.
So that's what you were saying, is to not to be rigid.
Yes. Please.
And so it took me some time to find that out, because although what works with me for the first 5 minutes is to just sit down, calm myself, like do a quick body sweep and blah, 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 just to get here.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh.
Start your meditation and it's not working, doesn't matter. Change slightly to something else. And if it doesn't work, that's fine for one evening, but try and, so I don't go with the same thing all the time.
Hmm.
So now it's like, if I eat the same ice cream every day, I'm not going to have the same enjoyment out of it every day. I might get extra enjoyment on the first day, but not. So changing slightly, ever so slightly. Mm-hmm. With the practice, one day I would have a bit of breathing and then go on to a bit of a body sweep again, this, that, the other. So small changes, and I find that works for me. It stops me from getting bored or too blasé or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps me occupied.
See, this
alert or aware.
Mm-hmm. You see, there's a bit of a complication here, which is unfortunate, is that you're absolutely, absolutely right there. What's strange is most people, not only, when we're talking about good quality food and everything else, yes, absolutely, having the same thing every day for every meal is not, it will make you sick. It will not give you what you need. But of course, for most of our experiences, most people are having the cheeseburger junk food every day. They're not even experiencing the good whole food, which is a big shock when you really look at it and how we live our lives. We're not even experiencing, you know, the good basic stuff, because we're attracted to this junk food, which we've been encouraged to buy with very glossy and shiny advertising, and convinced, you know, been made to convince that it's going to give it to us, but it doesn't. But it's exactly right. Even if you have the best food, it still isn't going to, you know, if you have it the same every day. So that, of course, is where meditation comes into its own, because all of a sudden you can be more engaged and more aware and more open to being in the experience that it will be different every time, and that it should be different every time. Because otherwise it will just get boring and blasé, and you just don't want to do it anymore, because just, you know, all of a sudden, instead of being bored with, say, driving a very, very cheap car, and you drive up to a Porsche, Mercedes, or the most expensive cars, and you just get bored with driving those. There's not much difference. So the importance is to be present and to know what makes this situation the best we can make it. And that helps in so many ways, I think. Is that in the areas, or?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, this, but in not in so eloquent a fashion. So, thank you.
We have a venerable, we do have a question in the chat. Can I read it to you?
Of course, yeah.
Ajahn is letting go of our perceptions so that we don't get attached. Will there be less cravings, etc.? This is from the picture.
Okay. There's something in that question which is very, very important. And the thing that where it can unravel is that I think where a lot of people take up meditation is they say, okay, I recognize that craving is a problem, therefore I need to do this letting go thing, and that the craving will go away and everything will be fine. To an extent, that sort of works, but it's a bit of a band-aid solution. What actually happens is that trying to let go isn't really letting go. I was actually talking about this kind of thing recently with someone who was doing this meditation style, and they basically said they could get to the point where it just happens automatically, and that's letting go. And I'm going, not necessarily, because we can just sit in front of the TV and do this automatically, and that's not really letting go either. Doing something, you know, automatically isn't the same. So for letting go to happen, which is where the question is, when you have that fulfillment in your meditation, that peace, that kindness, that you don't need anything else in the world in this moment, and it's perfectly all right just to be here, and you don't want to be anywhere else, what need have you to crave? For this moment, we don't need anything, because there is happiness here. In whatever meditation style it is, whether it's watching the breath, whether it is body scanning, whether it is the metta, the mantra, the this, that, if you have that, that peace, that kindness, You don't need to crave anything. And that's where it sets in. And in daily life, it's the same. When you're living a good life, a happy life, you can watch TV and all this advertising, it's just not going to grab you because you just don't need it. You see through it. It just doesn't have any appeal because you have something better. And what you have that is something better is something that everybody has, but we just don't really know it. So that's more sort of a, perhaps an abstract way of approaching it, but there's something a little bigger in that which affects more people because, you know, they hear the Four Noble Truths or they are just told that craving's a problem, you've got to stop craving, but, you know, you can't stop craving, can't stop wanting. And especially if there's trouble or there's trauma or there's misery or there's emptiness or there's meaninglessness and there's depression and frustration, all these things. Of course you're going to want, of course you're going to crave something else because your current situation is so miserable. You're going to want something else. It's completely natural. And that's what we're trying to recognize here, is the fundamental situation we're in, the fundamental relationship we have with ourselves. If that's good, we don't crave anywhere near as much for things, and there's far less trouble. So keep at it, keep at the meditation, you know, see where it goes. Use this, not so much in this fixed form, but explore it, go for it. What do you need? What do you really need? Sometimes that's the question, is to ask yourself during a meditation, or particularly after a meditation is the best time, what is it that I really want? And that's the big question. So I hope that helps.
A picture is sending you a greeting back, Venerable, so it obviously has helped.
Okay.
Thank you. I think Alyssa might like to speak again. Alyssa?
Yes, thank you. So, Venerable, back to the calming, the body, focusing on different parts of the body depending what comes up. I wanted to ask if that can also be thought of as a way to generate, to establish metta, you know, friendliness. And sometimes they may I be well, happy, and peaceful. You know, that's not always getting there. So this is a way to bring that about. If you could comment on that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because this is the thing. Once again, if you find that happiness in yourself, that kindness, that friendliness, and you can share that with yourself in a broader sense in your everyday life, because we might be happy and having a lovely time in this meditation now, but what's it going to be like tomorrow, next week, next month? We can share that with ourselves in the bigger sense, but also with others. And that's a really valuable thing. That's a really wonderful thing. Because it's right there. It's so wonderful. And that's the thing. Once you have that feeling of kindliness, it becomes the metta. And that metta just spreads so easily. You can share that with others because you're feeling it right now. You don't have to imagine it. You don't have to say, oh, what is this metta thing? I'm saying, may all beings be happy and da-da-da-da-da. Well, I'm not happy, I'm miserable, I'm unfulfilled, I'm stressed. I don't even know what metta is. How am I supposed to wish other beings be happy if I'm not happy? I just don't know what it means. And once you experience it, you do know what it means. And you know what it is that you can share. It's very wonderful. Hope that helps, you know, hope that's
Very much so, very much so. Thank you. And you're right. It's funny because I'm thinking, the eyes as sensors are, you know, like a wild rodeo a lot, right? Because they're very much on. So calming them, I think, is a nice, you know, key point, calming the eyes and come out to calming what is what it seems. So an experience. So thank you. I have put in a lot of nice stuff to go forward with. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, Alyssa. Maxine or Melanie, would anybody else like to add a contribution or comment? Or?
Last year, I did a three-month course, online course, with an Abbey in America, the Mayana tradition, and we were taught analytical meditation. You had to do it, and I found that so difficult. I just couldn't do it. And I was wondering, is that the next stage that we have to progress to?
Analytical meditations.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how they're defined. I think there's different ways of doing that. But to sort of say if that's something to progress to, I would sort of say no, without understanding more of the context that they were trying to put you in. For some people, they're more, we can say, devotional-based, and therefore reflective thinking, investigation, is useful for them because it kind of balances out what they're short on this side. But for people who are very dry, stressed, tired, already thinking way too much, analytical thinking could be a bit too early, could be a bit of a problem.
Mm.
But one of the...
I found it very difficult.
One of the main central points of Buddhism, which unfortunately has been, you know, a lot of discussion about it because it's been so, I think, misinterpreted, is there's this thing called Samatha Vipassana. And in Buddhism, they always link together. At least in the early texts, you find Samatha Vipassana is one word. And Samatha means calming, stillness, the peace,
yeah,
the calm. And Vipassana means to see clearly. So those things go together. And so if you're peaceful and calm and relaxed and at ease, and those firewalls can come down, you can see through that. You can see more clearly because you have that trust in yourself. Because as I said earlier, there's a little bit of a conflict of interest in ourselves that we know that we've got stuff we need to deal with and there's all this stuff we can't handle, but it says we're not ready to deal with this, not going there, and we shut it out. And this is the opportunity by this calming we can open up more. But to jump into the analytical side too early can be a disadvantage because, you know, we're just too disruptive and it's as you say, it's very, very hard. But it's also not very beneficial sometimes. It can be a head game.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. But it's well worth continuing building that good relationship because this is the other interesting thing, is that when you do have that good kindness and relationship with yourself, you feel more the direction you need to grow. It's like it naturally moves in this direction. You know, to say like the plant moves towards the sun is a bit of a cliche, but it is much like that. And it's not something that you need to think that, oh, I should be doing this, or is this technique right, or is this tradition right, or what am I supposed to be doing? It's far more natural a process because what we're really looking at is what's already here.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Melanie or Mariana, or anyone.
Thank you, Venerable. I don't. Well, it's not a question, but in meditation, sometimes I don't feel like doing according to the guided meditation, and I just let myself do whatever I feel more, let's say, comfortable, because I try not to force myself to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be very kind with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's me being a bit lazy or it's the right thing to do, because sometimes my mind is very, very agitated. And I found that mantra or things I'm trying to do doesn't help, And what helps the most is waiting for my mind to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to have your advice or what you think about it. Thank you.
In a very large point in this, is that everybody's meditation is going to be different, and everybody's meditation needs are going to be different, not only now, but tomorrow and the day after. So very much being present to yourself is very, very important. Yes, there can be cases where it's just lazy, no, I just want to sit back and just do whatever, and that's going too far the other way. But quite a lot of the times, when you have that good relationship with yourself, straight away, the messages are there, I need to relax more, or no, I need this, or oh, I'm really painful here, could you just adjust a little bit? Your body and your mind is sending you messages of what it needs to settle, because that's what it really wants to do. It wants to relax. It wants to have that peace and that quiet and that calmness. And that, when that becomes more natural, when you become more open to that, your meditation really develops very quickly. Because all of a sudden there's not this, you're not trying to force it. You're not trying to say, okay, you should be doing this, this, and this. And your mind's sort of going, no way, I'm sorry, you're not listening to me. I'm just going to do my own thing and you go away. That happens a lot. It's so important to have that relationship with yourself in that way. And so it's very, very beneficial to be open to, especially in the first few minutes, but also further in. And because you're more present with yourself, you have that sort of communication, that engagement with yourself, you're more willing to sit there and be there with yourself, to be present. And you can sit longer and deeper and enjoy it more. And therefore it gives more benefit in the practice. Because really, all meditation styles that we teach, that are written in the texts, they really all lead to the same thing, which is what the text says, to lessen the five hindrances, which is to calm things down. And that's really what they all lead to. But how each person's going to get there is their own style. It has to be their own style. So for some people, teaching a metta style was great for them. A lot of people, they don't want to talk about metta. They don't want to feel the emotions. That's kind of, no, I'm more intellectual, or I want to do mantra, or I want to do this. And that is where they develop, is a style which is compatible to them. So we have to offer people different styles to find what they're compatible with. So I hope that helps a bit.